Well, remember the theme of the book of Revelation. I told a joke, I think, when I started the series about a seminary student who observed one of the janitors reading the Bible and went over to see what he was reading, saw that he was reading Revelation, and asked him if he understood what it meant. And the janitor said, "Oh, yes." And of course, the seminary student, you know, thought, well, this janitor can't understand. He says, "Well, what does it mean?" And the janitor says, "It means God's going to win." And that's the key for us to recognize that as we begin to wade into some of the symbols, and some of the symbols that have been a little bit more terrifying for people as they read them, that's the key that God's going to win. And last week we introduced two of the symbols that are so important for us to remember to hold through the rest of this. It's the one in the midst of the throne, which represents one, that God experience, our oneness with God, and the Lamb, who first is introduced as a lion but shows up as a lamb, which of course represents the expression of Jesus Christ, but also for each one of us, that Christ within us, that is that power, that is that presence, that is, as Arthur was saying, that victory that's at work. And so these two symbols we need to hold on to through the rest of our experience. And as we open the seals and have the trumpets and the bowls and all these other things that come on, to remember that overriding that is this victorious, infinite presence of God that's always there and always at work. And the key for us to look at that. One of the dear ladies from our church in Merced always had such a peaceful countenance. And I asked her one time, I said, "You know, you've had some challenging experiences in your life. How do you always seem to just rise above everything?" And she told me a story. She said years ago she'd been a part of a women's organization. And in that organization was one lady, and all the other ladies would go to this lady to get advice. And then after coming away from talking with her, they always felt better. So she went to this lady one time, and after watching this, and said, "What is it that you tell these ladies that makes them feel so much better?" She says, "Well, I don't say a thing to them." She says, "I just listen, and the whole time they're telling me their story, I just think to myself, 'Tain't so, tain't so, tain't so." And that was her way of saying, you know, whatever our human story is, that's not our real story. We can get all caught up in our human drama. And some of us have some great stories, and some of us get lots of energy from retelling our stories. And we want to get that sympathy from others so that we know that they're understanding and feeling with us, so that we feel better in our misery because we have someone who's joined us in the midst of us. And to realize that whenever we get caught up in our story or caught up in somebody else's human story and miss the spiritual story, we're missing the most important thing. We're missing what's really important. So we need to recognize that the human story isn't to be dismissed, but to look through it. And as we hear the things that go on, you know, and there's tragedies that happen in people's lives, to just say that that's not the real story, that there's something else, there's something greater, that we are about, because that's the way God made us. God made us in the image and likeness of that reality, that oneness, the image and likeness of love, the image and likeness of creative power, the image and likeness of joy. We're made in that image and likeness. And so when we remember that, then we can tell our story with a whole different sense, because there's a different meaning that comes out for us. Now, as we look at our experience, there are always difficulties that show up. And it's important for us to look beyond that to the blessing. I was thinking just in terms of just some simple things. If any of you have ever done any bodybuilding or lifting weights, you know that the way that science at this time understands what building your muscles is about is that you put enough strain on the muscles that you actually tear the tissues so that when you're done, they rebuild and they're stronger. You know, that's the way that they understand the science. If you've ever done any gardening or landscaping, you know that you have to prune back plants to get new growth. And that, particularly if you have fruit plants, that the fruit comes only on the new growth. And so there has to be a pruning, a cutting back, so that new growth can be there. And see, from our human point of view, we don't like the pruning part. You know, if you remember several years ago, our gardener cut back the bottle brushes that are out on the street here. And they looked terrible for about 9 months. Like, what did he do? He whacked them off. But they were so spindly and so thin that they weren't really healthy. And if you look at them now, it's like there's all these green leaves and the flowers are growing now in a much more vigorous way because they were cut back. And so we go, well, that's fine for the bottle brush, but leave me out. Leave me out of that cutting back part. Well, as we look at the unrolling of the scroll, the unsealing of the scroll, we're going to just look at the first four seals being broken today. It's about being aware that there are some parts of our lives that we need to look at and say, this isn't working, it needs to be cut back. And it's a releasing. And if we think of that scroll as being our understanding of life, and I know many times I look at my life and say, what's going on here? What is this about? And you realize that the unsealing of the scroll is about a revelation about our lives for us to look at, not to be afraid of the images that come forth, but to look at. The Jungians talk about a shadow self, a part of ourselves that we are so angry about, that we're so in despise of, that we're afraid of, that we don't want to deal with it. And usually what happens is that we have people show up in our lives that exhibit those same characteristics in ourselves that we don't want to look at. And they show up in our lives for us to have awareness. And of course, we do all this stuff towards them and usually don't even take a look at that. But we realize that there are aspects of ourselves that need to come up into the light so that they can be released and let go. And not to be afraid of the shadow aspects of ourselves, but to be joyous that we can have more understanding and have breakthroughs to something more, something greater in our lives. I also, as I was working on my lesson this week, thought of the Chinese word crisis. And in the way that the characters are drawn in the Chinese language with the brush strokes, the word for crisis is a combination of two other words, the word danger and the word opportunity. So if you think of the crises in your life, you know, those moments, there was usually danger, but there was also an opportunity that was being given to us, again, to live in a different way. So as we look at these unveiling or the unrolling of the scroll to know this is a part of it. We have the image, if you remember from last week, of four creatures that were around the throne that had all these eyes, and there was one that looked like, let's see, the first one looked like a lion, the next one looked like an ox or a calf, depending on the translation. The other one had a face like a man, and the fourth was one that looked like a flying eagle. Well, now in this first four seals that are opened, what we have is each of these creatures comes forth to speak, and then a horseman comes out. So we'll go through this and take a look at what's going on. This is chapter 6 in Revelation. As I watched, the Lamb broke the first of the seven seals on the scroll. Then one of the four living beings called out with a voice that sounded like thunder, which just means a powerful voice, "Come." And I looked and I saw a white horse, its rider carrying a bow, and a crown was placed on his head, and he rode out to win many battles and to gain the victory. Now, there's some people say that what this rider represents are the Parthians who came with archers to conquer Rome. And so their view is that, you know, that this is historical and it's already happened, ancient history. But again, as we look at symbolically, what the white rider represents is that aspect of ourselves that is able to vision victory, that is able to see overcoming. And again, it represents that part of ourselves that the flying eagle creature represents, of being able to use our inspiration, our intuition to be able to see beyond. Now, what happens is, when we go about victory from a human point of view, what usually happens for us is that we don't operate as win-win. We operate as I want to win, which means somebody else is going to lose. And see, the key is to realize that the living creature that stands around the throne of God represents a divine aspect, an aspect of God, and the horsemen represent our human attempt to do this, which usually falls down. And so the unveiling is just to say that we've tried to do this on our own, it didn't work. And for us to be aware of that, that we try to do that. So this first rider, as it begins to open, as it begins to go, is about dominion from our human point of view. Now, how many of you like to control the things of your life? How many of you are very good at it? And what happens when it doesn't work the way you want? Yeah. And to realize that there's a part of us. You know, we live in a world, we live in a universe that has many different things going on. You know, the current big fear that's being promoted is meteorites hitting the planet. Yeah, and how much control do we have over that? You know, none at all. So, you know, the big thing now is we're talking about building a base on the moon with a big telescope looking in every direction so we can look for these meteorites coming so that before they come we can send a nuclear warhead up there and blow it up. You know, it's like, well, that sounds good, but it takes more than pocket change to do that. And there's other things that I think might be more important than that. And so to realize we're not going to control that. You know, how many of us can control the weather? You know, how many of us control our response to the weather, much less control the weather? You know, if it, you know, in the summertime we complain about how hot it is, in the wintertime we complain about how cold it is. And many of us have lived in other climates where it gets much hotter and much colder than it does here, so you know, we don't even control our own response to that. So to realize that, again, this rider goes forth trying to be in charge, but it's not really very successful. It's a part of us, again, that needs to be released. That unveiling of it is for that rider to go forth and for us to let it go so we can move on to other things. Now the second horseman comes out. Then the Lamb broke the second seal. I heard the second living being say, "Come." And another horse appeared, a red one. Its rider was given a mighty sword and the authority to remove peace from the earth. And there was war and slaughter everywhere. Now, again, there's many different interpretations of what this red horse is about. As I read and as I study and pray, the red horse to me represents our emotional nature. And again, what happens when our emotional nature rides roughshod on us? We've seen people just torn apart by their emotions, being not able to control. And again, many times when we try to control, you know, have you ever talked to someone and you can see them just trying to hold on, and you say, "How are you?" And they're like, "I'm fine." And they're just trying to hold on to themselves and not let themselves get torn apart. And what happens when we do allow our emotions to run wild is that it does look like a war sometimes. It does look like a battle zone. And we see many times in families where one person who has a lot of rage that is expressed with the rest of the family walks around. It's like, don't get that person upset. You know, don't say anything. Don't talk about this. You know, because if you do, there's an explosion that happens. And it's, you know, not literal bloodshed, although sometimes it is literal bloodshed, but emotional bloodshed that takes place. And to realize, again, for us to look at when we try to control our emotions with our human energy, it's going to build and build and build and build until there's some kind of explosion. Some people, the building process takes longer. Some people, it doesn't take so long. It's very quick. But to realize, in any case, our human attempt to control that is not going to work. You know, so again, there has to be a spiritual understanding that we can release our wanting to control it and to understand that our feelings really follow some belief that we have, some thought that has gone before. And we need to lay hold of that thought consciously and see what it's about and then change the thought in some way. Otherwise, we're going to be riding that red horse and it's going to be a rough ride for us. And many of us have done that and we're tired of it. So realizing we wanted to do something different. I'll get that later. The third horse is the black horse. The Lamb broke the third seal. I heard the third living being say, "Come." And I looked up and saw a black horse, and its rider is holding a pair of scales in its hand. And a voice from among the four living beings said, "A loaf of wheat bread or three loaves of barley for a day's pay. And don't waste the olive and the wine." The black horse represents our intellect. And again, the intellect as it goes forth has the scales. It wants things to be fair. You know, we think of the symbol that we have of justice, the woman with a blindfold and the scales. And the blindfold is supposed to represent that not seeing station or money or color of skin or anything like that, but judging fairly. Many times we look and say, well, justice is blind because whoever was involved with this missed the point. Yeah. But again, if we think many times the way that our intellect operates, it'll see something and latch onto that. And one of the fascinating things for me is to listen to an argument between two people sometimes. When the more I listen to them, they realize that they're saying the same thing, but because they have different ways of languaging it, they're arguing about their languaging and missing what's really going on here. And sometimes I'm able to say, can we stop a minute? Is this what you're trying to say? Yeah, is this what you're trying to say? And you realize it's the same thing. They go, oh, well, then they find something else to argue about usually. Because again, some people get feed on that energy of disagreement. But again, our intellect is there. And again, our intellect serves a noble purpose when it's directed by spiritual understanding. But when it isn't, what does it do? It looks to try to make things right. And the reference to how much wheat and barley are going to cost is about, again, trying to establish prosperity simply from an intellectual, a material point of view. And we recognize that, yes, people can do it. People can amass great wealth. But usually, if that's their whole focus, what they've left out many times is family. They've left out health because they've been, you know, stressed out and working so long. They've left out spirituality. And so they get to some point of accomplishment and sometimes will end their lives or do things that just shatter any ability to have a sense of peace in their lives. So again, the intellect is not bad. It's only when it's allowed to be in charge and doesn't have that focus. And what one author said, that when the intellect is riding and the emotions are making war and the intellect is riding trying to do its thing, what always follows is a short period of prosperity, but then there's famine. And if you think historically in the world, many times following a war, what happens? There's a depression. There's famine many times. And so recognizing that that's symbolic of what happens in our own lives as well, is that there may look like we've got something, but then we usually find that there's something missing. The fourth horse. And again, different translations give different words. Some translations say it's a pale horse. Some translations say green. But it's not a rich emerald green. But sort of, have you ever seen somebody who was sick to their stomach? And it just sort of this pale green look comes over their face. Well, that's the sense of it's this paleness. And this horse represents our physical form, but it doesn't have the connection with God. And then the Lamb broke the fourth seal. I heard the fourth living being say, come. And I looked up and saw a horse whose color, see this one says pale green, like a corpse. And death was the name of its rider, who was followed around by the grave. Hades is the actual word that's in the Greek. They were given authority over one-fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and famine and disease and wild animals. So that's where we're going to stop us with the fourth seal. What this fourth seal represents is the physical form, our physical approach to life, when it doesn't have a spiritual base, when it doesn't have a sense of a connection to that infinite life of God. And destruction of the fourth part just means us trying to control without having an awareness of God in our lives. And I've told you before in my preparation for some of my backpacking, what I found is that as I'm hiking with 35, 40 pounds on my back, that parts of my body complain. My knees complain. My hips complain. My feet complain. And so I could give up and saying, oh, well, I guess, I'm not in shape or whatever. I'm not going to do this. I'm too old. Whatever belief system I want to attach to it. Or I can say, I can bless my body. And so that's what I would do. And I would found that there are many different ways of doing it. Last year as I was doing it, I would just, as I had each step, I'd go, God, life, God, life, God, life, God, life. And that was my way then of addressing the pain, not ignoring it, but blessing my body so that I could see it as an expression of God's life. This year, what I was doing, I would the words that I would use were radiance of being. And more than just seeing the physical form being blessed, seeing the physical form really being an expression of divine energy. And then I would go, radiance of being, radiance of being. And I found that as I did that, that my view of the surroundings that I was in as I was practicing and as well as doing backpacking was much richer. Because I was also aware, particularly when we were up and seeing some of the wildflowers in the meadows up around 11,000 feet. I mean, just radiance of, I perceived radiance of being. I mean, there it was, just this life, this, you know, presence of God's life through these flowers. And it was just magnificent. And I know that my appreciation of it was much greater because of the preparation that I'd made in my mind of holding that idea of radiance of being. Now, when you look at your physical form, you go, radiance of being, and you go, oh, gee, these wrinkles, and, you know, I've got this pain in my hair. You know, and again, looking how we usually look at our bodies, because we don't see it as a part of God's life. We see it as separate, and we see it as like these flowers here look beautiful in this moment, but imagine what they'll look like in a couple weeks. You know, we know that they're not alive anymore. They have the appearance of aliveness, because that's what florists get paid to do, but we know that they've been cut. They've been cut off from life. They've been cut off from that flow of life-giving activity, and so they're going to wither and die. It's the same thing that happens to us. When we don't see ourselves as connected with God's life, then this physical form simply degenerates. You know, and that's not necessarily what has to happen. You know, one of the other things that happens is, as we do the muscle building and with the tissue, you know, tearing down and then being strengthened, is that in addition to that is that the bones are strengthened as well. Bone mass increases as you put a load on it on a regular basis. The body knows how to do it. The body says, oh, you can put more weight? Okay, I'll build up these bones a little bit. We have in our minds what happens as our bodies age, our bones deteriorate, right? Well, maybe they don't have to. And one of the studies, I think I've shared this before too, is that some men in their 90s were tested and they began doing weightlifting. And they found that after 3 months of weightlifting, their bone mass increased 20%. You know, well, that just flies in the face of what our human thinking is aware of. And so realize there's another reality. There's another reality. And what we need to do is to release, you know, these riders going off are about letting go of these concepts of the human being able to do it on its own so that we can, again, focus on the presence of God. Now, as we deal this, what happens is we begin to look at our beliefs. We begin to look at our ideas. We begin to look at our images that are false, that are limited, that are not helpful. And we go, ugh, that's me? And we realize that we say, no, that's not you. That's the point. That's what you believed, but that's not you. So this opening of the seals is an opening of an understanding, a revealing of this Christ nature that says that what you're about can be something more. Would you like that? It's an invitation. It's an opportunity. We can get caught up in what's wrong. We can get caught up in how it's not working. Or we can look through that to an opportunity to be focused and centered in God. I was reading something from Jerry Jampolsky recently, and he said that one of the experiences that he had a dream one time, but working with children who had illnesses and many devastating cancer, you know, little 5, 6, 7, 11, 12-year-olds that he was working with. And he was concerned about their experience of going through death and working with them. Well, he had a dream one time. And in his dream, he saw all these kids who had died that he'd worked with. They were all dancing in a circle and just singing in joy. And all of a sudden, they went from dancing in the circle into just rising up as light. And he says, well, I guess I can let go of my concerns about them and realize that they've got it. You know, they've been released. And they're in that experience and moving through it. Now, if we trace human history, we can see these four horsemen have ridden through history through all the ages. And if we trace our own personal history, we'll see that these four horsemen have been riding through our own lives as well. And the key here for us is to say that there's another way that we can do it. There's another way to let our spiritual nature be where our focus is, and to know that it can feed our spiritual aspirations, it can direct our intuition, it can work through our feelings as an expression, because if God gave us feelings, there must be a purpose. And those feelings are there as energy to help us do the things of life. When we let our intellect be aware that there's only one mind, and that mind is God. And when we think with that mind, divine ideas work through us, and that inspiration will come. And then we see our bodies as a temple of the Spirit of God, not just a physical form that needs to be fed and bathed and clothed and housed, but as an expression of spirit. When we begin to see that, then these four horsemen are released, and we live then with as an expression of those living creatures that are around that image of the throne of God. Now, we know that God doesn't need a throne. It's an image. But we recognize that what it's about is something greater. Jerry Jampolsky also said for most of his life he kept looking for the treasure at the end of the rainbow. And then at one point he discovered the treasure was within himself, his own spiritual nature, his own connectedness to God. And when we see that, then we find that we can look through those difficulties into blessing. And in September's Daily Word, there's a wonderful little poem by James Dillard Freeman titled God's Light. I look for a light, but I see no sure light shining. In a world where there are so many lights to see, to catch my mind at my mind's least inclining, and send me searching from now to eternity. But the light that I'm looking for is not out there, however enlightening some of those lights may be. And they will but send me running from doubt to doubt there, until I look to the light God lights in me. Let us pray. Dear God, we are grateful that we can look beyond the difficulty into blessing, that we can look for the freeing activity of your Christ Spirit. And just as Jesus rides, not just through heavens, but through our minds, through our lives, as a symbol of victory, as a symbol of overcoming, as a symbol of the freedom of your Spirit, we give thanks that we are called along on that ride. Thank you, God. Amen. I invite you to close your eyes. And let's take a holy breath together. And in letting go, the layers of belief, the energies of our human try, letting go, trying to be in control. And we let that image of the throne in heaven take symbolic form in our mind, not literal form, but symbolic form. And the one who sits on the throne, that living presence of God, omnipresence, not just in one place, it's everywhere. Which means it's everywhere around us and within us. And not within us as a point or points in space, but within us as the underlying reality out of which what we are rises into expression. And we see that as it rises into expression that we make choices. Many times out of limited beliefs, misunderstanding, out of fear. And out of those choices, the riders are formed. And so we resolve ourselves back into that reality of God before choices. And let that reality be our reality, at least in this moment. And see that we can make new choices. As that energy of God rises in us, we can choose to remember that with God as the reality, divine ideas are already at work in our minds. And as we choose them, as we choose to think them, to believe them, to operate from them, that we are blessed. Creativity, with energy. Our very aspirations become entwined with God's will of absolute good. And there is no separation of my will and God's will, but only a desire to express the blessing. And as we choose this energy of God, then our feelings are harmonized. We don't have to control them, but they are drawn into peace. They are drawn into joy. They are drawn into a flow of divine love that pours out upon us and upon all the world. And then our bodies, like thirsty animals, are ready to drink that elixir of divine life, the radiance of God's being. And we see each cell, each atom, filled to overflowing with vibrancy, vitality. We see that each moment is a choice about how we let this energy of God rise up through us. And we choose, again, the Christ example. And a part of the Christ example is taking time for oneness. So again, we let go of even our good choices for a moment of conscious oneness in the delicious presence of God's life, love, wisdom, and peace in the silence. Thank you, dear sweet spirit, for the wisdom that comes to us, that we may see through the things of life to the reality of your blessing, ever calling us to freedom, to wholeness, to joy, to love. Thank you, God. Now let's sing together our echo version of the Lord's Prayer.